Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynes, are you ready to talk some umpires? Are you ready to talk some officiating? We had a really weird situation in New York yesterday. I don't know, during the off day for the Guardians, we was able to tune in on MLB Network and catch the Yankees and the Athletics. Hunter Wendelstedt behind the plate and Aaron Boone in the dugout, at least for the first five pitches of the game, because it didn't take long. Hunter Wendelstedt tossed Aaron Boone after Boone had said something in for the first at bat of the game. And then Wendelstedt apparently heard some chirping continue from the dugout. And turns out it was a fan behind umpire Hunter Wendelstedt who said something, and he turned and tossed Boone, and Boone didn't say a word. Have you ever seen a manager get ejected from a game for not saying anything?
Joe, I have not seen that. I'm sure it's happened, though. I'm sure a player has been ejected, you know, when he's sitting next to one of his teammates who's doing the chirping, and the umpire, you know, has to pick somebody, and an innocent guy gets tossed to the showers.
Well, I can't say that I didn't chuckle a little bit knowing that this is the Yankees. This thing does kind of seem to happen to the Yankees maybe a little more than any other team, or at least when it does happen to them, it's definitely publicized a lot more. We see it. It makes big headlines. I believe a few years back, Brett Gardner got tossed out of a game in a similar way, where he was on the bench and somebody else down the dugout said something out loud, and Gardner got tossed, and you know, he went crazy because he didn't say anything, and the video shows that he was sitting there not saying anything. In this situation, they have clear video of you know, Boone not opening his mouth, not saying a word. That the sound came from the fan that was sitting in the first row behind him. It was a pretty sparse crowd at Yankee Stadium, and this really, it's pretty obvious that it's an example of Wendelstedt, you know, having, you know, rabbit ears, having, you know, hearing something that he thought he heard, and immediately turning and tossing a guy without really being able to prove, hey, that was what Boone said. In this case, kind of pains me to say, yeah, Boone's actually innocent in this regard. But you know, as a basketball official, I've been there. You know, I've teed guys, issued technical fouls for, you know, what I thought I heard when I didn't really hear it. And it's kind of a sinking feeling as an official, but, you know, to double down on it after the game and say, oh, well, it was somebody down the dugout, who Boone's the manager, so he's got to go if that happens. It's really a bad look for Major League Baseball.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you make a mistake, you make a mistake, and the umpire should have said that after the game, because obviously, you know, I think the first thing you're going to do if you're an umpire, especially a plate umpire, after the game, you're going to go in, check the tape, see what people are saying. And you know, reporters are going to come down and ask you about this, especially when it's on videotape, when it's so obvious. So you have to have you have to handle it a little better than Wendelstedt did.
Well, part of the problem here is, and we've seen this with Angel Hernandez, we've seen this with other missed calls, you know, by umpires, that the league will, and the Umpires Association will, you know, defend him and back him, even though there's a mountain of evidence to the contrary. They will stick behind their guy in this. And to a degree, I agree that you need that kind of support 98.99% of the time. But in a situation like this, where it's so obvious that, you know, he screwed up, he made a mistake, he should not have ejected Aaron Boone in that situation, you know, is there a call for maybe the ability to review this or go to a replay system of some sort that, you know, you can say, take a step back and say, hey, you know, this is not a permanent thing. Immediately, as soon as you would, you know, make that motion to eject him, he's gone and there's nothing you can do. You can't take it back. Should that instance be reviewable?
Well, they review almost everything else that umpires do. I guess Do they review an ejection? I'm not sure. I mean, it could be in a case like this, Joe, but I think ejections are ejections, and I think I think everything would have been okay if he just kind of manned up and admitted he made a mistake, then you move on. But from now it's just hanging there, and it's gonna be a story today and the next day until a resolution is reached.
Yeah, and we'll get into, why we won't find out about that resolution here in a minute, but would reviewing something like that make the game better? Because obviously the fans aren't there to see Aaron Boone. The fans are there to see players. And Wendell Stetz said after the game that, I didn't want to toss a player out of the game, but Boone had to go because he's the manager and he's responsible for the dugout. I kind of get that, yeah, but you got to make sure you get the right guy. And this was a guy sitting in the first row, not Aaron Boone in this situation. So I kind of wonder if maybe a review of that would benefit the game or make the game better by keeping the people who are supposed to be in the game in the game. Now, you can't unring the bell in that situation. I get it, but maybe if Hunter Wendelstedt could get together with the other members on his crew in that instance and say, hey, what'd you guys see? Because I want to be able to maybe take this back. He could admit in that moment that, maybe he got it wrong.
Yeah, that's not a bad thought. Not a bad thought at all. But I think, sometimes, obviously when an ejection is made, kind of tempers are running hot. And I don't know, I did, and really when you think about it, there's not that many ejections anymore in baseball
Right.
with replay and everything else. So, why not? You have a good point, Joe. I don't know. I think if there was some uncertainty, he could have met with at least had met with his crew and to see if they had seen anything.
Yeah, it's just the finality of that. You're gone, you're out of here. Once you make that gesture, once you make that motion as a as an official, as an umpire, it's there's a permanence to it, and maybe that should fall under the category of something that, can be reviewed. Are we 100% sure that this is something that that needs to happen? So, who knows? There's a lot that goes into this in terms of the holding him accountable afterwards. The are we going to find out what, if any, discipline Hunter Wendelstedt is going to face? Because you can stick to your story about, oh, I heard somebody down the dugout, whatever, all you want. But when you get in a room with your evaluators, your bosses, and the people in the Umpires Association, and you talk about it, he's going to admit that, yeah, I screwed up. I tossed somebody that I shouldn't have, and he needs to see consequences for that. The problem with the current setup is we won't find out about that unless somebody from the New York media really pushes the issue with the league and says, hey, what happened to Hunter Wendelstedt in terms of discipline for this, or is he being disciplined? If he doesn't show up on a crew for the next week or so, we won't know about that because they shuffle their crews around and the guys show up, all over the place in different orders. So, I just is it too much to ask for MLB to hold some sort of accountability for these guys in situations like this? I'm not talking about the daily, how many balls and strikes do you miss? You can't, it would be maddening to try and shuffle guys around based on, the quality of their ball and strike calling or their, how many missed calls they have in a game. But if in an instance like this, fans or, the public were able to see, okay, well, there is a consequence for, behaving like this behind the plate or anywhere on the bases or interacting with the players, that would probably go a long way for the league.
Yeah, I think a little more transparency would definitely help. But like you were saying earlier, Joe, I mean, Major League Baseball, has to protect the umpires. I mean, they're vulnerable. They don't have any home games. They don't have any people cheering for them. It's always, you know, the umpire against the world. So, and in this day and age, I don't think you want to, you know, really kind of hang an umpire out to dry like that. But I think there has to be some accountability.
Well, and the biggest example of that is Angel Hernandez. And, you know, there are tweets and threads online and examples, countless examples of just the poor quality of his officiating over the years. And yet he continues to have a job. How does, you know, I can't count the number of times I've read the tweet. How does this man still have a job in Major League Baseball? And it's the hubris, I guess. It's the arrogance of, you know, thinking, well, I can go out there and miss as many calls as I want, and I'm not going to have any sort of consequence or any sort of discipline levied upon me. We've seen bad umpire behavior before. Who was it? Madison Bumgarner, when he was getting checked for sticky stuff on his hands, and the umpire just sort of stared at him, didn't even look at his hand. It was just this, you know, this weird scene a couple of years back. There have been examples that aren't the norm for the majority of the time. These guys do a great job and they get the calls right the vast majority of the time. But the guys who are consistently making, you know, showing up on my timeline, at least for screwing things up, why can't they be weeded out at some point?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Angel Hernandez, what, filed a lawsuit against Major League Baseball or the Umpires Association because, he said there was a reason he wasn't being promoted to a crew chief,
He said he was being discriminated against.
Is that
what you do when you're a bad umpire? You say, oh, well, I'm being discriminated against?
But I don't know. I think the behavior of the umpires, you know, in the last 20 years has really improved since they brought it under one mantle, you know, the commissioner's office, instead of having National League umpires and American League umpires. They tried to bring in new blood, you know, younger umpires, you know, all the kind of the old feuds went away. And like we were saying before, Joe, replay has, you know, reduced the tension between players and umpires significantly. So I don't think, you know, there's it's not like the old days when Ken Kaiser, you know, used to throw out Earl Weaver, like every time Earl Weaver blinked. You know, it's not that those days, I think, have gone. But, you know, obviously there's still some ill feelings here.
Do you remember any crazy interactions with, you know, between umpires and, you know, Cleveland, the Indians managers, you know, back in the day before replay, before, you know, sort of this modern take on the whole relationship between the two?
I just remember there was a game in Oakland when Pat Corrales was the manager, and he was yelling at the umpires. He finally got, you know, ejected. The home plate umpire comes over, ejects him, and he goes, you know what? You stink. We stink. And he said a few words you can't repeat. And then as he's going down the tunnel, he throws out the medical kit on the field, and all these pills, all the aspirin and everything spread all over the field. And trainers Jimmy Warfield and Paul Spinkoza are on their hands and knees picking everything up. It took like 15 minutes to you know, clear the field. It was crazy. So you don't really see stuff like that anymore.
Yeah, and you know, Boone went out and got his money's worth after the ejection. You know, that's when he started cursing, and the mics picked up you know, everything that he said. And to play the other side of it, devil's advocate, you know, the Yankees seem to chirp and complain and cry about maybe a little bit more than anybody else. And Boone, you can certainly see the pressure he's under trying to get every call. I mean, this was the first batter of the game on a check swing as he was hit by a pitch was what he was originally complaining about. But to his credit, he stopped complaining about it after that and hadn't said a word. He said Wendelstedt pretty much fired back at him you know, went at him hard with it coming back. And then that was it. He had shut up. And that's when, you know, the fun began. So this instance, I think it maybe this is a flashpoint. Maybe this is something moving forward that we'll see some changes. But, you know, not likely. It's probably going to be handled the same way that any of these umpire interactions have been over the last couple of years. I did want to bring up something I saw online. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the account on X, formerly Twitter, umpire scorecards. It's at ump scorecards, and it's really interesting. They do breakdowns of every home plate umpire's performance after every game. They're usually posted the next morning, and you know, they're able to draw in all this information, all this data from the pitch tracking, you know, services and all that. But based on what they're the information that they're able to gather, they can do a weekly and a, you know, by season rundown of the teams that get the most favorable calls from home plate umpires. And we're not talking about, you know, ejections or plays at the bags or anything like that. This is purely balls and strikes and the strike zone of each umpire and how that impacts each team. Hoynsie, you want to take a guess at which team in Major League Baseball right now has gotten the most favorable home plate strike zone calls through the first 22 games of the season?
Joe, I've got no idea. Tell me.
It's the Guardians by a whopping plus 8.02 runs per game. The Guardians have experienced the most favorable umping. Here's the quote from umpire scorecards. Two AL Central teams, the Guardians and White Sox, are off to very different starts. They've also experienced differing umpire performance. The Guardians are the most favored team this year at plus 8.02 runs, while the White Sox are the least at minus 6.3 runs. That gap grew significantly this past week when the Guardians were the most favored team in baseball and the White Sox were the third least. The statistics on this are sort of eye-catching. Last week in the games played from Sunday through Saturday, plus 3.09 runs for Cleveland. Overall accuracy, 94%. Overall consistency, 93%. But batters have been favored by 1.23 runs per game more, and pitchers favored when they're throwing strikes, 1.86. And in my mind, I think one of the big reasons for this is the return of Austin Hedges to the clubhouse and to the club in terms of the way he not only is able to frame pitches, he's one of the best in all of baseball, but he's now teaching those skills to guys like Bo Naylor and David Fry.
That could be very well, Joe. It's an interesting concept, or maybe maybe it's just that you know, Stephen Vogt and the Guardians are so well behaved. You know, Stephen Vogt has, we have well behaved gentlemen wearing the Cleveland uniform. They don't challenge the umpires.
Well, that might be the case also because, you know, Stephen Vogt after you know, just being on the field and playing within the last 2 years. He says he's said on multiple occasions, hey, I've got pretty good relationships with a lot of these umpires. I mean, for Vogt's entire career, he was the last line of defense between these guys and a 98 mile an hour fastball. So you get to be, you know, pretty favorable and pretty positive towards a guy who keeps you from getting knocked unconscious on a regular basis. Maybe Vogt's relationship as a catcher with some of these guys is paying off in a favorable strike zone. I can't complain about that if you're a Cleveland fan, for sure.
Well, the Guardians are 16-6 and the White Sox are 3-19. So, you know, that's a radical difference. I don't know if the umpires' calls are making that big a difference, that huge of a, you know, that they could be on different ends of the spectrum in the AL Central.
Come on, Hoynsie, you know me and my conspiracy theories. I'm all about this. This is This is what I this is the information that I crave and I want to put out there in the universe. Speaking of putting information out there in the universe, the latest on the Guardians and their next opponent. It's a familiar matchup coming up tonight at the ballpark. We're going to see Tanner Houck again after a three-hit Maddux against the Guardians last week at Fenway. He matches up again with Ben Lively. Lively, of course, he of the Phantom balk call last week in a game where the Guardians lost 2-0.
Yeah, you know, Lively really pitched well, I thought, in his first start for Cleveland. You know, obviously he went up against, you know, Houck that just, you know, you couldn't beat him. I mean, a shutout, what, a three-hit shutout, 9 strikeouts in under 100 pitches. You know, he was masterful, and it'll be interesting to see if Cleveland's hitters can make any adjustments against this guy.
Yeah, that will be the big key, is how will they adjust to Tanner Houck? What will their approach be during their at-bats to what he's going to do? The Red Sox, after Cleveland left town, went on to sweep Pittsburgh in 3 games. So they've won 3 straight. The Guardians have won 4 in a row, and you know, both teams had an off day yesterday, so should be interesting, should be fully rested, should be a big weekend, or a big week at the ballpark at Progressive Field. I want to remind our listeners, if you're tuning in, the best way to get updates from the park, as soon as we talk to Stephen Vogt every day, it's on Guardian Subtext. Go to cleveland.com/subtext. It's $3.99 a month to sign up. Or send a text message to 216-208-4346. Hoynsey, we'll catch you at the ballpark, and we'll get this Boston series underway. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
All right, Joe. Thanks, man.